TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for tuning in this morning to the broadcast. My goodness, I have to start off by saying there are a lot of people in the chat room already, and I really appreciate you guys being in there, but there is a little bit of commentary going on back and forth about our theme song, and I chose that theme song for the show, Radioactive, because I like the double entendre. First of all, we're all becoming radioactive because, well, Fukushima and probably all the garbage they're spraying in the air, but at the same time, we here at Truth Frequency are, in fact, radioactive as well, and by that I mean, of course, we're active on the radio, so I thought that double entendre was good. I just got one person, Izzy, in the chat room. He's joining us all the way from Australia this morning, and we appreciate you guys joining us from around the world as usual, saying he really likes the song. But we also have another gentleman who's not in the chat room right now, but usually in the chat room, named Paisley, who does not like the chat room, or does not like the theme song. So I'm trying to figure out which we're going to do with it. I really like it. I think it's a great tune. It isn't obviously as complex and as intricate as some of the other introductions here on the network, but I still really like it. I might try and extend the song just a little bit so we can actually get into the chorus part where they actually talk about being radioactive. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. There's a lot of people in the chat room right now saying, keep it, keep it, keep it. Okay, Paisley, if you're listening out there in Radio Land, you got outvoted, brother. I apologize about that. But anyway, thank you guys for tuning in this morning. Lots of familiar faces in the chat room and some other people in there just kind of making their way in for the first time. And it's so nice to have the new listeners showing up. Can't tell you guys how much we appreciate the support, both here at Red Pill Reports and as well at Truth Frequency Radio. Let's start from the top here. My name's JD. We are live right now. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. We are bringing you your listener-powered daily dose of deprogramming, and we are on your favorite network for alternative news and information. Of course, that is Truth Frequency Radio. You can find us at truthfrequencyradio.com and also on the dial at 90.7 in beautiful Denver, Colorado. Appreciate all of you guys tuning in both in the chat room and on the radio today. We do have an outstanding show for you guys today. I'm really excited to be welcoming Joel Karsten to the show. Joel Karsten has written not just a book about straw bale gardening, guys, but he has written the book about straw bale gardening, and I will give you guys all the links if you are curious about them right this second. You can go over to redpillreports.com, and right at the top of the page, you'll see that guest section, which will tell you everything you want to know about Joel. So we, you know, a lot of times on Friday, we kind of like to get into the esoteric type stuff, but here also at Red Pill, one of the main things that we're trying to do is provide you guys with some solutions, you know, some ability to do things for yourselves. And one of the main things that we try and cover on the show is the threats to your ability to be self-sufficient. And one of the best ways I have found to become self-sufficient, obviously, is growing your own food. But ladies and gentlemen, you guys may not believe this, but I'm pretty lazy, actually. I'm not really a huge fan of laboring all day in a garden. I'm not a big fan of weeding, things like that. So this whole thing with the straw bale garden really eliminates all of that. So we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, man, I don't know if the weather, if we're going to get warm and it's going to get nice and we're going to be behind the curve. And then last night I'm looking at the news and I see that there's 23 states in the United States that have snow right now. So apparently we're not quite ready to be growing food yet. But the beauty of the straw bale garden is that you can actually make it a three-season growing opportunity. Plus there's so many other benefits to it, especially if you're a renter or something like that. Anyway, I'll get away from that because I want to obviously let Joel tell you everything that he knows about straw bale gardening. Yes, Izzy from Australia, we actually have snow still here in the United States. I was talking to my buddy Fletch yesterday, and he's got a specific tree on his property that blooms every single spring. And apparently they've had this tree on their property for a very long time. And his dad, who used to be a commercial painter, used to kind of set his schedule by that tree. When that tree had bloomed, that was pretty much, okay, all bets are off. We can go out and start painting. Now, that tree apparently bloomed a couple of weeks ago, and it has still snowed. I guess it has snowed three times since that tree has bloomed, which just tells you, you know, this global warming thing. I was actually talking to my neighbor last night, and we were both kind of giddy, thinking, man, it's 60 degrees right now in Missouri, and there's no humidity. And if this is global warming, I'll tell you what, I am on board, ladies and gentlemen. I am on board, because it is single-handedly eliminating the one thing that I absolutely hate about living in Missouri, which is this blistering heat and humidity combination that we seem to get every single summer. And so, you know, if global warming is keeping a little cool here, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. But anyway, big show today with Joel Karsten. I'm really excited to bring him to you guys. You know, I've talked to a couple of individual listeners out there that are really excited about this because they want to know everything there is to know about the Straw Bale Garden. So that's what we are going to do for you guys today. Also, did you guys happen to hear Robbie Holes' show yesterday that she did with me? Oh my gosh, ladies and gentlemen. I just want to recommend one more time, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing and Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening. Those are the books that we talked about yesterday. Wow, what an amazing woman Robbie Holes is. She has jumped all the way to the top of our repeat guest list. I'll tell you that right now. So she'll be back in May, and we'll get into some more depth on that specific conversation then. So anyway, that's what's going on. I do want to recommend people go check out those books, especially Fran. I know if you're out there listening, Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening. You will absolutely be floored by this book. And so that's what's going on today. We'll talk about Joel's book, The Straw Bale Gardens, and I'll give you guys a link where you can go pick that up. Really good stuff. Just to get into next week real quick, because it is Friday, I want to give you guys a heads up on next week's schedule. Huge, huge, huge schedule next week. I tell you what, I don't know how Fletch and Robert, the two guys that are co-creators of Red Pill Reports, do it behind the scenes. But I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, all of you guys in the chat room owe them a big thanks for the ability that they have to bring these amazing guests onto the program. Commander Dale Brown will be back on Monday. One of my very favorite people on planet Earth. I'm sure that you guys know that. He's got my vote consistently for Attorney General of the United States, which apparently is not going to be happening anytime soon. We'll talk about that when we get into the national news. But Dale Brown, Detroit Threat Management Center, one of the most amazing altruistic human beings walking the face of the earth at this point. And we are stupid excited to have him back on Monday. On Tuesday, Alana Freeland will be joining us. We're going to be talking about geoengineering, and she has written a book about geoengineering and also the full spectrum dominance of planet Earth via control of the weather by the agencies in charge. It's a good thing that that's obviously all fiction, right? That could never actually be happening in the United States. Anyway, Alana Freeland on Tuesday. The one and only Nano Girl is going to be joining us for the broadcast on Wednesday. I don't even have to tell you how excited I am about that. It's just going to be absolutely incredible. She's, you know, been on Kev Baker's show many times, and she's here on the network. She's always in the chat room as well. Just absolutely love Nano Girl. And so we'll be talking about tech stuff. There's a lot of crazy tech stuff right now. There's a story breaking out of China that they have successfully altered human embryos. So open up the discussion into the ethics world on that one. We'll probably be talking a little bit about that with her on Wednesday. Dr. Brooks Agnew will be joining us on Thursday. If you haven't listened to X Squared Radio here on Truth Frequency, you're not doing yourself a service on that one. And then on Friday, Carl Lehrberger is going to be joining us. He has written a book called Secrets of Ancient America. And I'm telling you right now, it's also on Bear & Co., which is a fantastic publishing house. Same guys that did, I think, the Aliens in Ancient Egypt book that we had Xavier Hayes on the other day to talk about. And this book, I'm telling you, Secrets of Ancient America is even cooler to me because obviously I live here in America, and this book, it's got all kinds of great color pictures in it. I'm talking big time stuff. And he really talks about the traveling of the Phoenicians really across the United States. Going to be an absolute amazing conversation next Friday. So definitely stick around for next week. I really appreciate you guys being here. And that's pretty much all everything I've got to say right now, because we have got a lot of news to cover. So let me get away from all of this stuff, and let's hop into the international news here really quickly. We've had a lot of stories recently about these migrant deaths, the drownings that are going on there in the Mediterranean. Obviously very tragic as people are trying to escape war-torn North Africa and also war-torn Middle East countries trying to make their way to the EU. Well, the EU heads of state actually had a pretty large meeting yesterday, and they basically decided collectively that they cannot absorb any more mass arrivals of migrants. And they say specifically that it risks undermining the entire EU, both economically and politically. So these diplomats were at this summit yesterday, and they basically came up with four messages. The first one was that the EU is ready to save lives, and indeed leaders are likely to agree on doubling the cash and equipment available to two Union Border Patrol missions in the Mediterranean, according to a senior diplomat. The second message is to traffickers. So the EU are going to try and make it very clear that the business model of trafficking these people over here or over to the EU is going to be destroyed. They're basically going to go directly after these, I don't know if you'd call them coyotes, but that's what we call them here in the United States, these guys that traffic people from Mexico into the United States. I don't know if you would call these guys that are operating out of Libya coyotes, but essentially it's the same concept. And so the EU is going to try and crack down specifically on those people. And the third message they delivered was specifically to the migrants. So the EU is also going to try and discourage migrants from coming to Europe, saying things like Europe has its limit. The individual member states and the individual societies have their limits, saying that further arrivals of migrants, again, are unsustainable economically and also risk destroying the EU. So the diplomats actually explain that discouraging migrants is a very sensitive political issue, and because it's a very difficult thing to try and present in a palatable way to the public, basically. But that's what they're going to try and do. The last message that they are espousing right now is an internal one, and that more solidarity between member states is needed right now in terms of the burden sharing, although that's not actually really expected right now. So we'll see exactly what the EU's response is going to be to trying to save some of these poor people who are just trying to get out of the region. I think a lot of the responsibility should fall on the empires that are actually fomenting this war, don't you think? I mean, the United States, I'm not trying to say that we've got enough money to solve these problems, but if we're going to go to the length of destabilizing places like Syria and Libya, we should probably have a hand in trying to save the people from what we created there in the first place. So that's my take on that. Wondering what you guys think in the chat room. Wow, 20 in the chat room right now. Appreciate you guys all being out there this morning. Very, very cool. Talking about Russia right now, and specifically about the Ukraine. We've had this Minsk ceasefire agreement on the table here now for a few months. But now pro-Russian rebels apparently, allegedly, have been shelling a Ukrainian army position east of the key city of Mariupol, which would be a breach in the ceasefire deal. And this has all been reported by the BBC, so you kind of have to take it with a grain of sand or a grain of salt, I guess, because obviously the BBC is part of the Western alliance, and they're going to tell you what the Kiev side wants you to think about Ukraine. But anyway, one of the BBC correspondents was actually with Ukrainian troops when they came under heavy fire moments after a team of international monitors left the area. And this comes a day after the U.S. accused Russia of sending more troops into the region, and Moscow, of course, denies any involvement. This truce between the two sides in the conflict was brokered back in February, but two Ukrainian soldiers told BBC that the fighting has continued despite the agreement signed by the Ukrainian forces and also the pro-Russian rebels in Minsk. The correspondent also says that after the most intense shelling had died down, they were able to find a large unexploded shell that apparently had smashed through the upstairs wall of the building that they were in. And its size actually suggests that it was fired from a heavy weapon, which would be the type that should have been withdrawn from the front lines under the Minsk agreement. So again, there's more potential now, more rumor now that the Russians pro-separatists are actually not really following suit with this Minsk accord. So, I hope it's next Thursday that Alex will be back on Kev Baker's show. Kev Baker does such a great job with his crew and Marty and Johnny, bringing in amazing guests from around the world. But one of the people that they get to talk to pretty much every other week is this gentleman named Alex, who actually lives in the Ukraine. You cannot get better information than just what is actually happening in the Ukraine from a guy on the ground. So really, really worth paying attention to what Kev Baker and those guys are doing over at that show. Definitely want to tune into that and see if there's any new developments there. More reports revolving around the Ukraine. This time, this one comes out of the Telegraph, which is, again, a UK newspaper. But apparently, Russia is carrying out a new military buildup in the eastern Ukraine, massing troops on the border and deploying advanced air defenses inside its neighbor, according to the U.S. State Department. So more units being deployed near Ukraine's eastern frontier, potentially giving Russia a stronger military presence there than at any time since October. And Mari Harf, the State Department spokesman, accused Russia and its rebel allies in Ukraine of breaking the second Minsk ceasefire agreement since February. But here's where things start to get tricky, is because we've had this story a few weeks ago about the United States sending quote-unquote advisors there, right? So the United States apparently sent like 300 advisors there to start advising Kiev troops. Well, part of the Minsk Accord was that there weren't going to be any foreign military troops on that soil. So again, who really actually broke this accord first? Was it the United States, you know, moving to put these advisors in? Obviously, we've also had the story about us essentially arming Kiev, sending more advisors and sending more equipment to Poland so that Poland could bring this stuff in. That way we kind of keep ourselves off of the books there. But again, you know, the proxy war is still in full effect right now, and kind of wondering if the buildup on the Russian side is a result of offensive or defensive maneuvers. I don't know. Also, man, there's so much of Russia in the news today, guys. It's just kind of wild. But talking about the thawing of the polar ice caps promises now that Arctic nations are going to get new opportunities to open trade routes, open ocean trade routes, and also offshore oil fields. So the chill between the Western powers and their Arctic neighbor Russia are making the North a new front line also in a Cold War. Senior envoys from the countries of the Arctic Council, I didn't know there was an Arctic Council, but apparently they met yesterday in the Canadian city of Iqaluit on Baffin Island, and the United States assumed chairmanship of this group with a call to address the threats and new opportunities of climate change. But the bear in the room is Russia, already at loggerheads with the West over this crisis in the Ukraine and a newly assertive nature in the Arctic. And the Arctic Council brings together ministers from Canada, Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, Russia, Sweden, and the United States. They're going to be joined, or they were joined, excuse me, by observers from the region's indigenous peoples and nations, including China, who is seeking an economic foothold in the region. So according to a 2008 study by the U.S. Geological Survey, the Arctic itself may hold 13% of the planet's undiscovered oil and 30% of the world's natural gas. So the melting ice is creating shorter shipping routes between the Pacific and the Atlantic, which is connecting markets in Europe and Asia. And the number of ships crossing the Bering Strait is already on the rise. It actually doubled between 2009 and 2012, and it also doubled again from 2012 up until last year. So really, the long story short here is as this Arctic area starts to become clear as a result of alleged global warming, trade routes are opening up. So that control of that area is going to be more and more tenuous going forward into the future. And so what is Russia's response? Well, they are going to start monitoring that situation in the Arctic with drones as part of the Northern Sea Route beginning May 1st. This is according to authorities there in Russia, and they are using vehicles that can be used in navigation as well as in search and rescue missions. So they say these drones have the task of maintaining impartial control of the situation in the Russian sector of the Arctic, including the ecological and ice situation in the adjoining sea areas and along the North Sea route. So again, Russia now moving to put drones into the area. They're going to start monitoring. They keep saying the same phrase over and over again, managing objective control. I don't really know specifically what that means, but again, Russia has been recently developing its northern regions, including the production of hydrocarbons, with national companies developing and exploring and constructing of drilling facilities up there. So again, they're probably going to be having these drones just out there to make sure nobody's messing with their stuff, which makes a lot of sense to me. But another facet of the Cold War rapidly approaching in the Arctic region. Let's move on to this whole Saudi-Yemen situation. I'm telling you, it's another situation that's just going back and forth over and over here. Warplanes from a Saudi-led coalition apparently pounded Houthi militiamen and military bases with at least 20 airstrikes throughout Yemen just yesterday. Again, this was 2 days now after Riyadh said it was winding down its air campaign. So on Tuesday, the Sunni Arab Alliance announced the end of its month-long bombing operation in Yemen, but the strikes have continued. A Saudi spokesman later said the forces would continue to target movements of the Houthi militia. And the Houthi-controlled health ministry said on Thursday that airstrikes have so far killed nearly 1,000 people, among them 134 children, and had wounded an additional 3,300. That figure has not been independently verified as of yet. But most of Thursday's raids hit Houthi vehicles and gatherings on the battlefields, where the group is fighting supporters of President Hadi in 6 central and southern provinces. And other airstrikes hit military camps housing units loyal to the Houthis in western Red Sea port of Hodeidah. And one strike hit Houthi tanks near the port city of Aden in the south, according to residents reporting to Reuters. In Ibb, which is a city in central Yemen, residents reported an intense series of strikes early on Thursday on Houthi positions and weapons warehouses. They also said targets included a military base in the town of Al-Kafr unspecified sites in Hubeyash and also a college on the outskirts of Ib and another in the nearby city of Yarim. So again, the situation in Yemen has not cooled down at all. We did have the report that Saudi Arabia was calling up their National Guard to be ready for any type of ground incursion. We still don't have any idea what's going on out in the ocean. There is a naval blockade of the entire country of Yemen that is being put forth by the United States in support role to the Saudis. So anyway, that's what's going on in Yemen right now. I have no idea if it's going to get any better or any worse, but it does turn out that the winding down of the airstrikes was not necessarily accurate. So that's where we are today in Yemen. Also, a report coming out of Russia right now that I think is fairly interesting. We kind of touched on this yesterday, but apparently a third, almost a third of Afghanistan's security forces have now turned to drug trafficking, according to Russia's Narcotics Control Agency. And the watchdog's director, Viktor Ivanov, he blames foreign troops and fighting in their drug-rich region. So Afghanistan, notoriously known worldwide for being the prime source of opiate production, including heroin, and a large producer of marijuana and hashish. And the U.S. campaigns in Afghanistan and Iraq have led to the rise of regional terrorism, which, according to Russia, has added to the rise of all sorts of illegal activities, including drug production and trafficking. So we've had this story many, many times, but just to reiterate, Afghanistan does, in fact, remain the homeland for the largest opium poppy production and distribution network in the world, supplying more than 90% of the global crop. And we, of course, are there guarding those fields, as we have been since 2003, ladies and gentlemen, when opium production from Afghanistan was actually only about 10% of the world. So just, sounds like a good job if you can get it. And a little side note here, a ginormous volcano has erupted in southern Chile. It erupted actually for the second time in a day after being dormant for nearly a half a century. More than 5,000 people were evacuated from the sparsely populated areas around around the capital city of Santiago and near the tourist town of Puerto Varas. And the state of emergency has been declared after the first eruption and was also a curfew was enforced overnight. So Chile's interior minister gave a televised address calling for calm, and they also said the military is being sent to the province to help evacuate people and keep order. Everybody is pretty safe right now, but I'll tell you what, if you want to go to redpillreports.com and check out this article, probably some of the most amazing photography I've ever seen in my life. It's always crazy to see a volcanic eruption, especially at night, because you get to see all of the lightning that's going on with it, and I'll tell you, it just looks absolutely crazy. So anyway, that's what's going on in Chile. Our hearts and thoughts and prayers obviously going out to anybody down there who's being affected by that. Hope you guys are staying safe. Reminder not to drive through all that ash because it will destroy your motor. Okay, moving into some national news here right now. On Thursday, so just yesterday, the United States announced that Congress has appropriated $1.6 billion as military aid to Iraq in the next coming months, noting that this aid is sufficient to run 9 brigades over there. There's a lot more ancillary story revolving this, but our involvement with Iraq is not over yet, and I'm totally fine with that. We need to get this country under control. We need to get ISIS the hell out of there as far as I'm concerned. But again, another $1.6 billion. Who knows where that money is coming from? Maybe they found some of that missing State Department money and they can shuttle that off. I doubt that that's the case though. But anyway, $1.6 billion getting ready to go to Iraq. Also, indications are that an American and an Italian who were both held hostage by Al-Qaeda, as well as 2 Americans working with the terrorist group, were inadvertently killed in a U.S. counterterrorism operation earlier this year. And the White House actually came out and admitted all of this yesterday. The White House said that Warren Weinstein, who is an American held by Al-Qaeda since 2011, and Giovanni Loporto, who is an Italian held since 2012, both of them were killed in a January operation in the border region of Afghanistan and Pakistan. And the operation targeted an Al-Qaeda-associated compound, and there was no reason to believe that either hostage was present, according to the White House. In addition, the U.S. believes that Ahmed Farouk, who is an American, who the White House says was an Al-Qaeda leader, was also killed in the same operation. And U.S. officials also concluded that Adam Godin, an American who served as a spokesman for the terrorist network, was also killed in a separate operation in January. And the White House said Farouk and Gadan were not specifically targeted in the operations, nor did the U.S. have information indicating their presence at the site. So we basically went out and killed 4 people having absolutely no idea what we were doing. They're saying we killed these 2 very well-known. I mean, I can say Ahmed Farouk on the air, and I can say Adam Gadan, and I'm sure most of you guys out there know who those people were. killed in an airstrike that we didn't know they were there. We didn't know they were there. Didn't know that these hostages were there that they've had for 4 years, who've coincidentally been begging President Barack Obama to come and do something about them. But Barack Obama says he takes full responsibility for these operations, but he does believe it's important to provide the American people with as much information as possible about our counterterrorism operations, especially in situations where they take the lives of fellow Americans. So again, all par for the course. Let's just kill everybody. I think that seems like the best answer to any type of diplomatic situation. What a crazy world. Another story here. According to the Treasury Inspector for the Tax Administration, known as the IRS, 10 former IRS service employees were sentenced in the Western District of Missouri earlier this year for the theft of government property stemming from unemployment benefit fraud. I don't know. We got to go to a break here in about 30 seconds, and I got to get my brain on, so we're going to get some more coffee. I do want to remind you guys that Joel Carson is going to be joining us here in about a half an hour. So if you have questions about gardening, straw bale gardening, he is a horticulture expert, so it's not just straw bale gardening. If you have any general questions about gardening, he's going to be the guy to ask. We're going to have an awesome afternoon. I swear it's going to be great. I got to give you another quick heads up, too. It does look like we might get a storm here, so if we get knocked off air, it's not a drone strike. And if you're listening, NSA, please don't drone strike me now just because I gave you a pass, all right? So anyway, we're going to be back after this three-minute break, guys. I've got more national news to get to. We also have some important economic stuff, some science stuff, and some health news that I want to get to today. Did you guys see that report that apparently came out just this week talking about the MMR vaccine and how there's no connection to autism? Right, independent report. I'll tell you how independent that report is when we come back from this break. Keep it right here, guys. We'll see you in a few minutes.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at PrecisionUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Like a cancer that's silently spreading.
Agent for Truth with Joe Bannister.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for hanging out through that 3-minute break, and thank all of you guys in the chat room this morning. 23 in the chat. Absolutely fantastic. Really appreciate you guys being along for the ride. I hope you guys are getting up some questions together for Mr. Joel Karsten, who's going to be joining us in about a half an hour. Got to remind you guys, too, right after my show is the fantastic Radio Ranch with Roger Sales coming out of Argentina. If you guys are interested in this legal, lawful division and ability and trying to find the ability to actually get yourself educated and get through the process of getting out from underneath the corporate infrastructure, Roger Sales Show is not a show that you guys can possibly afford to miss. So I want to really recommend you guys stay tuned to Truth Frequency right after my show, and you'll be able to hear Roger Sales coming out of Argentina. Also today, Vincent Finelli and Aaron Dakins do their show immediately following that. And also, after that show will be True Stream Media with Aaron and Mel, who have recently just become Aaron and Mel. Big old wedding announcement. I'm not sure if they're going to be live today or if they're on their honeymoon or not, but either way, they do great stuff, and I definitely want to recommend their show. And then, of course, we'll be back tonight for your weekly dose of the Woo on the Friday Night Woo Crew, and I have it on pretty good authority that Mr. Anthony Patch is going to be joining us again this evening. So we'll be talking more about CERN, what do you want to call it? The DNA with the three strands. I mean, we're talking about frequency. It's going to be a wild conversation. So much fun on a Friday night to have him along for the ride. So definitely be back here for that. Okay, we'll hop back into the news here. I was talking about the IRS. I'm telling you guys about these 10 former IRS employees that were sentenced in Missouri earlier this year for basically stealing unemployment benefits and doing unemployment benefit fraud. So these individuals were required to certify weekly via the internet or telephone any work and earnings in order for the Missouri Division of Employment Security to determine the validity of continued benefits. And all 10 of these defendants were employed at the IRS while claiming unemployment benefits through the Missouri Division of Employment Security and resulting in the fraudulent payment of benefits in the amount between about $6,000 and $21,000, with a total aggregate between the 10 of these people at about $112,000. Not really all that much money, if I'm perfectly honest. But good news is that there's really no indication from the inspector generals that the IRS employees were anything but entirely honest and above board in their handling of your taxpayers' business. So you can rest assured that those 10 people that we just mentioned, they were totally above board when they were messing around with your taxes. Probably can't be said about Mrs. Yolanda Castro, though. She put her hard-earned tax examination skills to very creative use. She was arrested in February of this year and indicted in the Eastern District of California for making fraudulent tax returns by an employee of the United States and also aiding and assisting fraud and false statements and also giving false statements to a government entity. So according to the court documents, Castro had been employed by the IRS in Fresno, California for about 20 years as a tax examiner and most recently as a contact representative responsible for responding to taxpayers' inquiries and making adjustments to taxpayers' accounts. But it's alleged that between 2007 and 2013, Castro prepared and filed, or caused to be filed, numerous fraudulent federal income tax returns for herself, her family members, and others, on which she knowingly placed false information and purported child care services, education expenses, business expenses, and casualty losses. And as a result of her fraudulent contract, Castro apparently defrauded the United States government out of a paltry $37,387. And I gotta say, that these are pretty dismal numbers. And if you're going to do something like this over 6 years, $37,000, she's never going to make it to the Senate, ladies and gentlemen. She's never going to be making it as a senator with numbers like that. So anyway, that's what's going on at your IRS right now. Kev Baker joining us in the chat room. Kev, do I have it on good authority that Anthony Patch is going to be joining us on the Woo Crew tonight? I want to know, because I'm not entirely sure what's exactly going on. So happy to have Mr. Kev Baker in the chat room along for the ride. If you guys are not in the chat room at Truth Frequency Radio, you are missing out on the opportunity to speak with chat room royalty like Kev Baker. I tell you what. And it's a great opportunity for me to ask him what in the heck is going on for tonight. And of course, now he just left the room. So there you go. I probably offended him in some way. Apologize about that, Kevin. Okay. Also, the U.S. Senate just yesterday did vote to limit debate on the nomination of Loretta Lynch to become President Barack Obama's next attorney general in a procedural move intended to end a 5-month deadlock that made her wait longer for confirmation than any of the last 7 attorney generals combined. And if confirmed as expected, Lynch would be the first black woman to become the top U.S. law enforcement. She's awaited confirmation since November when Obama, a fellow Harvard School law graduate, nominated her to replace Eric Holder. Eric Holder is expected to step aside early next week so Loretta Lynch can take over as head of the U.S. Justice Department. I have no idea what her story is. I haven't done any research. They just throw too much stuff at me these days, guys, to figure out what's going on with her. We do have Anthony Patch tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Kevin, for that killer update. Okay, also, going over into Missouri, since we're kind of in Missouri right now, Ferguson, Reuters reported yesterday that the Brown family is seeking unspecified punitive damages, $75,000 in compensation, and changes in policing in this lawsuit that they are now filing. And again, this is a civil lawsuit filed by the family of Darren Brown, Michael Brown, who was obviously the unarmed black man that was killed by Officer Darren Wilson a few months ago, leading to all kinds of riots and crazy conversations about what we actually need from law enforcement in this country. But anyway, during yesterday's press conference, the attorneys representing the family said pursuing a civil lawsuit will hopefully lead to new evidence that will show that Wilson should have been indicted and held responsible for Brown's death. One, that's something I absolutely agree with. So again, the attorneys said the lawsuit is a way to challenge police officers who kill people of color, and they also used the recent examples of Walter Scott and Tamir Rice to highlight the fact that the standard police narrative is contradicted by the objective evidence in most cases. And the USA Today actually reported that the lawsuit alleges that Wilson violated Brown's civil rights through a deprivation of his right to unlawful detention and also the use of excessive and deadly force. It accuses both the city of Ferguson and the former Chief Jackson of failing to hire, train, supervise, retain, and conduct a fair and impartial investigation, alleging that the police department had a custom or policy of negligently hiring and retaining officers, failing to properly train and supervise those officers, and also failing to supervise them in the use of deadly force. So we'll have to see exactly what is going to go on with this lawsuit. But the civil lawsuit, I believe, will probably open up a lot more information about what actually happened that day. It should be really interesting to see where that goes. But again, unspecified damages being sought now by the family of Michael Brown there. Minnesota House, we got to talk about this. If you're in Minnesota, boy, I'll tell you what, I don't like this at all. Minnesota House this week passed a bill that would cut the minimum wage for thousands of restaurant workers who receive tips. And if this bill is signed into law, it would create a 2-tiered minimum wage that critics refer to as a tip penalty. Restaurant owners would be able to pay employees a lower wage if they made at least $4 an hour in tips. This is absolutely ludicrous in my mind. We're trying to basically circumvent the fact that they want to pass a law to raise the minimum wage to $9.50, but a lot of restaurant owners are saying they cannot afford to pay their employees that much and on top of tips. So again, if you're in Minnesota, that bill has not been signed into law yet. I would probably try and get involved with that. Also, breaking news out of Tennessee. Tennessee has done something good as opposed to what Minnesota is doing. Tennessee voted to outlaw unmanned speed cameras, and also they banned the issuance of traffic tickets from those unmanned speed cameras earlier this week. So multiple judges from across the county have been throwing out traffic camera tickets due to their unconstitutional nature. And the original intent of this bill was to outlaw red light cameras and speed cameras. However, the bill was stripped of some of its elements through the committee process, and currently the ban only outlaws speed cameras. However, school zones and S-curve roads will still be able to utilize the cameras. Just a little heads up here, ladies and gentlemen, just don't pay them. I guarantee you what they're doing here right now is, oh, it's a constitutional thing, and we're not going to do this anymore because it's not constitutional. Negative. That's not at all what's going on. Not at all. Look at Arizona. Arizona had all kinds of speed cameras, and they were trying to generate a lot of revenue with them. But what actually happened in Arizona? They had to yank the speed cameras out because so many people were not paying their tickets. And first of all, if you get a ticket, don't pay it. Just don't pay it. The whole thing is stupid at this point. Sign it under duress and coercion, give it back to them, and make them explain to you that they have control over your signature in some way. But anyway, what happened in Arizona? Speed cams, so many people decided not to pay that they actually had to invest in infrastructure. And by infrastructure, I mean servers. They had to have a server bank just to keep the spreadsheet of all the people who hadn't paid their bills. And just the payment on that server and keeping people monitoring that server and the infrastructure, you know, heating and cooling, all that stuff, was way more money than they were making with the actual speed cameras. So they decided that the whole thing was stupid and they pulled it out. So again, just don't pay them. That's the best answer here. Want to give you guys a quick heads up too. You guys are going to have to go to redpillreports.com and check out the show section today, because this came across the wire late last night. I'm going to put this link in the chat room here for you guys too. But Wolfgang Halbig, he's been a guest here on the program. He is a national school safety expert, and he's been talking quite a bit about Sandy Hook, mostly the fact that Sandy Hook was a non-incident and didn't actually happen, which is great if you're somebody out there who cares about children. But he is going to be in Sandy Hook today, ladies and gentlemen. There is going to be a live broadcast. He is going to be speaking with the Connecticut Freedom of Information Commission. Again, this is a hearing that is going down today. He's going to be directly addressing the Newtown Police Department. It's happening at 1820 Trinity Street in Hartford. And it begins at 2 p.m. Eastern. It will be broadcast live, and you can find that. I just put the link in the chat room at Insane Media. You can also go find the link at redpillreports.com in the show section right at the top of the page, kind of scrolling down towards the national news. So that's an important development. I would really like to see this go down, and I'm going to be one of these people tuning in for this. So there's the link in the chat room. I want to make sure we're all out here giving our best thoughts and intentions and prayers to Wolfgang, because there's nobody out there working as hard as this guy. And I'll tell you, there's nobody out there who would rather not be doing it as much as Wolfgang. We're talking about a 70-year-old guy who's got grandbabies and plenty of better things to be doing with his time than addressing the fact that he, while asking questions about Sandy Hook, was apparently threatened at his home by two Connecticut state detectives. They came to his home in Florida. Absolutely unbelievable. So again, Wolfgang Halbig, send him your thoughts and prayers this morning, and do tune in for this thing this afternoon. Real quick, while we're in the United States news, giving you a quick FLACA update. Jamie Nicole Lewis, she's a 22-year-old. She has been in charge now in Florida with trafficking and importing FLACA and possession of the illegal controlled substance with the intent to distribute, a conspiracy to do the same. And according to the U.S. Justice Department, by bringing in FLACA and also trying to distribute it, she faces a maximum of 20 years in prison, ladies and gentlemen. So there's your FLACA update for the week. Just don't do it. It doesn't seem like a good sign. I don't know how many stories are out there that are going to start, hey, remember that time me and my buddy, we were naked in my brother's house doing FLACA? It's just, that's not going to be a good story. He don't want to be in that mode. Okay, let's get into some economic news here really quickly. Let's see. The Dow is currently up about 25 points above 18,000. We're at 21 and 12 for the S&P. The DAX is up just a little bit today at 11,809. Dollar index is diving. 97 and 12 cents is the dollar index. The euro climbing today, 108 and 63. Baltic Dry, I have no idea. Mother Flocka. That's what we're going to start saying, guys. Mother Flocka. Silver is down just a little bit today, $15.64, which is a total buy for me. Gold, way down this morning, $17 down. We're at $1,176 for gold right now. Commodities, well, let's look at the oil. Pretty flat today, $56.94, so just below that $57 that we were at yesterday. And then the 4X, let's check out the Bitcoin, $229.07, down just a touch this morning. So that's what's going on in the big picture right now. Forgetting about the Grexit, there's a new word that everybody is playing with now called Grimbo, because Greece is in limbo. And I'm not going to go through this entire article, but there's a great article from Zero Hedge. Obviously, Tyler Durden does such fantastic work. But we're basically still in this back and forth situation. Obsidian in the chat room asking me if I'm a bit punchy this morning. I think so. I think it's because it's Friday and I'm excited and I've had my tangy tangerine and I'm on my second cup of coffee and I'm feeling pretty good and I'm very excited to be bringing Joel to the stage today. So I don't know. Yeah, maybe I'm a little punchy today. I don't know. Hope you guys are hanging with me. Anyway, Greece, nobody knows what the hell's going on. Is it in? Is it out? Is Russia going to save them? I don't know. We're moving on. Let's see what else is happening. Oh, I got to give you this quick story too. This has been going around the blogosphere here for a little while, and I'm not sure if it's necessarily accurate or not, but Paul Joseph Watson actually did break this, so I'm pretty sure it's fairly true. But last week, according to Citigroup, Citigroup is now trying to abolish currency. They actually came out in a meeting last week and they were like, we don't want dollars anymore. Also, some JP Morgan Chase customers, this is the big story, are starting to receive letters informing them that the bank will no longer allow them to store cash in their safety deposit boxes. Is that absolutely crazy? Or what? I don't understand this at all. Of course, they don't want you to have cash. They're trying to eliminate cash. It's quickly becoming kind of a colloquialism anyway. But that story was pretty significant. There was another story, and I want to say this came out of Cleveland. Same bank. It was JP Morgan. Essentially came out with a policy this week where they said they weren't going to be accepting cash in payment for mortgage payments, right? You couldn't go in and pay your mortgage with cash. So perfect. I wish they would do this here because I would be standing on the corner with a sign in front of the bank and we would own the bank in about 3 hours. Because here's the deal. If you can get them on film, go in there and film them. Bring all of the money that you have in cash to pay your mortgage and let them refuse to accept legal tender and have them do it on film or have them do it in writing. Say, I'm bringing this cash in to settle my mortgage and you guys won't accept it. End of debt, ladies and gentlemen. Your mortgage is now free and clear. You offer them a remedy for the debt that they supposedly own, and they don't want to take it. Boom, you're out of debt. You own your house free and clear, lock, stock, and barrel, ladies and gentlemen. So if they try and pull some crap like this in your neighborhood, that is what I would do. That was my advice to you. Also, had the story about McDonald's kind of going down the tubes yesterday. Well, there was another announcement late last night that they are planning on closing 900 stores worldwide by the end of the year. They are not telling us exactly which stores and in which markets, but 900 less McDonald's will be plaguing the earth by the end of the year, ladies and gentlemen, which to me is fantastic freaking news. I am a big fan of Chipotle, but I don't really go, we don't have any of that here, so I don't really go out to eat. I'm a big fan of my rice cooker, I'll tell you that. Okay, I got to get into, we got to get away from some of these economic stories and get into this health thing, because I got to tell you know, there is nothing that infuriates me more, ladies and gentlemen, than when somebody tells me that there is not a connection between the MMR shot and autism, because I lived through it. I watched my brother go as a perfectly healthy young man, get his shots, come home, develop seizures, and now he's autistic. So if anybody tries to tell me that there is no connection there, is absolutely, you're begging for a kick in the head here, guys. But there's been a lot of mainstream media hype this week about this supposed report that has come out. Big time, big time, big time, alleged independent study finally proving that the MMR vaccine is not linked to autism. But had to do a little bit of research into this alleged independence of this review panel, and it's not nearly as independent as they would have you to believe, ladies and gentlemen. So, for instance, the organization that actually conducted the study is called the Lewin Group. It is a corporate healthcare consulting firm from Falls Church, Virginia. The Lewin Group works with a wide range of players in the medical establishment, most notably major pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, and Novo Nordisk, among others. It should also be noted that at least two out of the three of these corporations are not only vaccine proponents, but they are vaccine manufacturers, all right? The Lewin Group also works with a number of major medical and pharmaceutical associations and organizations like the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America Association. And in addition to working with federal, state, and local governments, the Lewin Group works with a variety of foundations, such as the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Heritage Foundation, as well as a large number of hospitals, health systems, and healthcare providers. The Lewin Group is especially involved in a major medical insurance program like Blue Cross Blue Shields, Health Now New York, LA Care Health Plan, Kaiser Foundation Health Plan, and WellCare, among many, many others. And in addition to these big connections to pharmaceutical companies and the medical establishment, the mainstream media is attempting to present the Lewin Group as being free from the influence of their own clients and associates. And in addition, the mainstream media conveniently leaves out the fact that the Lewin Group is not independent in as much as it is actually owned by the nation's largest health insurer, United Health Group. Okay. Interestingly enough, United Health has seen its business grow over the last year due to the surge of customers forced into the market under Obamacare. So it is thus no small wonder why United Health lobbied so hard to even eliminate a public option from the Affordable Care Act during the stage in which the bill was being debated. United Health lobbyists also used work provided by the Lewin Group as a basis for its argument that providing a public option would kill the private insurance industry. And those few Democrats in the U.S. Congress that disagreed were apt to point out this conflict of interest between the Lewin Group's findings and United Health's desires, referring to the Lewin Group's work as so-called analysis and also suspect. So it is highly unfortunate that the Lewin Group's conflict of interest and shady findings were aptly pointed out back in 2009, but not so much in 2015. So according to the mainstream media, these conflicts of interest do not exist. However, United Health has been a major promoter of vaccines through its health insurance programs and vaccination campaigns. United Health is the parent organization of United Health Care. The promotion of vaccination by the United Health has gone far beyond the realms of simply providing vaccines as a service or following medical recommendations. It has been a comprehensive program designed to promote vaccines, complete with targeted messages for diverse populations across race, age, and ethnic diversity to increase the vaccine rates. So United Health's program through subsidiaries like United Healthcare also sought to increase awareness of diseases and to promote convenient access points. With all of this information correctly understood, it should be clear that the Lewin Group is not an independent observer. To present, it as such is at best dishonest and at worst part of a coordinated campaign to promote dangerous pharmaceutical products that have been demonstrated to cause serious damage to adults and especially children. And while legitimate research has demonstrated the harmful effects of vaccines, particularly the MMR shot, it has been demonized and mocked, and the research has been persecuted by whorish media outlets, unrestrained corporations, and narcissistic medical fanatics. Meanwhile, hack studies and purchased scientists are presented as the epitome of scientific development. But the truth is that there has never been a study proving vaccines are safe or effective that was not connected to a pharmaceutical company or a vaccine maker. And the mainstream media's recent jaunt into this realm has led to change any of those into facts. This was an article written by Brandon Tuberville over at Activist Post, and I got to tell you, that is some outstanding research done by him. But again, this entire independent, you know, review of MMR shots going back supposedly forever and ever, just not accurate, ladies and gentlemen. And I would definitely recommend you guys check out Dr. Sherry Tenpenny's work on anti-vaccinations. You can go to edgytruth.com, and I think drsherrytenpenny.com is her website as well. So much information out there these days that would lead me to not want some company whose business model is based on keeping me unwell to pump me or my children full of proprietary chemicals that I'm not even allowed to know what they are. So also, there is, if you go online, you can probably still find, there is a fantastic PDF that you can actually download and print out and make your doctor sign. If your doctor is going to give a vaccine to your kid, you make this doctor pledge his accountability personally, and then you make him sign it. And I guarantee you there has not yet been a doctor who will sign that in the United States before they give your kid a shot, because that makes them personally accountable. And I would definitely recommend personal accountability for these people who are monsters. And Obsidian in the chat room saying, yes, that will stop them. I totally agree with that. I want to talk a little bit about this goofy situation that's going on with this Italian doctor who's claiming that he can do a full head transplant in about an hour. Well, he thinks that most of the work can be done in about an hour. The rest is going to take a marathon of other doctors working in tandem for about 24 hours in total. But Canavero is this Italian doctor. He's admitting now that this head transplant step goes in line with his ultimate aim, which is that of creating immortality. And I don't know necessarily that I want to live forever on this planet. But yeah, Izzy, that's what he's saying. He can do most of the work in about an hour. So the entire procedure says they're going to cool this guy's heads down, right? Just the same way as the doctors would to do operations on the brain. And then they're going to cut it off and they're going to switch it into a different body. Doctors say they have a few minutes to attach all the blood vessels, and that whole thing will take less than an hour. After that, the full joining process could take up to 24 hours. And Canavero said that it would be carried out by a team of doctors, again, to ensure none of them got tired, and that the doctors and surgeons from around the world have already inquired about joining this team. He also expects that he will be explaining this procedure in depth at a neurosurgeons conference later in June, and he believes that he'll be able to prove that it's totally possible to all of the skeptics out there. And the first patient for Canavero's first attempt has already been chosen. His name is Valery Spidanov. He is a 30-year-old Russian man who has Werdnig Hoffman disease, which wastes away his muscles and means that his health is rapidly declining. But the doctors say that if it is successful, there could even be larger problems for Mr. Canavero. So again, not really necessarily sure if this thing is going to work. They think they may have to go to China just to try and do this. So again, the doctor's a little worried about going and doing this procedure in a country that's not necessarily friendly, but he says he's been studying Chinese for 3 years just in case he gets arrested while going over to do this. I don't know. I mean, this is where we're going, ladies and gentlemen. I just like to try and keep you guys head transplants. I mean, we are there. It's 2015. This guy, by the end of the year, wants to do a head transplant. I don't know. What else are you going to say about that? Lots more in the health news section today. Let's see here. And there's also some science and tech stuff probably ought to talk about. Let me think. Well, let's see. Nah, I'm not going to do any of that. We're basically getting ready to go to a break right now. If you guys are missing out on some of this news, do definitely go to redpillreports.com and check out the show section. There's all kinds of news that we aggregate from around the world. Just as a side note, I will talk a little bit about an article here in a second, and these two topics are not related, but if anybody has a timeshare or perhaps you have a house near the Venice Beach area that you need someone to house sit, say you're going out of town for a while and you need your plants watered, I would like to put my name in the hat here. If you guys need a house sitter and you're in Venice Beach area, just kind of throwing it out there. Just totally random thought. Also, in a completely unrelated story, the Venice Neighborhood Council, in a resounding 12-2 vote yesterday, approved the allowance of female topless beaching at the legendary Venice Beach. So again, topless female beachgoers are going to be now allowed in Venice Beach. Has nothing to do with why I might want to go there and house sit your house. Just completely unrelated topics. But anyway, we're going to go to this 3-minute break. When we come back, Mr. Joel Carson will be joining us, and we're going to get you guys squared away on your gardening needs, get you guys growing some food out there, which is what everybody needs to be doing right now. So keep it right here, guys. We're going to be back in 3 minutes. Appreciate you guys hanging out in the chat room, full crowd. See you guys in just a second.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
Real people, real radio.
Initiating the truth frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. I am so excited to be finally bringing you guys the one and only Joel Karsten to the program. Now, for you guys who don't know Joel, he is a horticulture expert, absolutely graduated from the University of Minnesota, received a Bachelor's of Science in horticulture. He also worked in the green industry. After graduating, he ran his own landscape design and installation company in in the Minneapolis, St. Paul area. He's also an avid vegetable gardener, trying any kind of variety that he can fit into his own 20-bale straw bale garden at his limited residential lot there in Roseville. He's also a fan of a whole host of flowers like tulips and dahlias and roses, just like I am. He's also looking for new introductions to new plants all of the time. It's my esteemed pleasure to be welcoming the one and only Joel Karsten to the program today. Joel, thank you so much for taking some time out of your schedule to be with us today.
Thank you, JD. Boy, that's quite the introduction. I have a lot to live up to here.
You do, yes. We set a very high bar here. But you know what? To be perfectly honest, you really don't, brother, because we've been talking a lot about the program. One of the things we try and do here is offer people solutions and, the ability to become more self-sufficient is kind of the name of the game around here, especially certainly should be the name of the game here around the country anyway. And you are really kind of at the top of the pile in terms of your knowledge about straw bale gardens. And I got to tell you guys out there, ladies and gentlemen, put the links to all of Joel's sites in the chat room today, and appreciate all of you guys hanging out in there. And you can go look at his book, which is Straw Bale Gardens. I would highly recommend getting this book. If you are a gardener, somebody who wants to maybe educate other people on an easier way to garden, the book is so good, ladies and gentlemen, full of color pictures. It is absolutely a must have, and it's not something you just want to get and read through once and think, okay, now I know about straw bale gardening, because there's so much reference in here. I like to be able to go back to this book every year and say, okay, what did I forget? So Joel, first and foremost, man, thank you very much for producing this book, Straw Bale Gardens, because it is absolutely outstanding. Let's start right there. What exactly led you to developing this technique, sir?
Well, I grew up on a little crop and dairy farm down in southwest Minnesota. And as a little kid, you bale a lot of straw, you bale a lot of hay. Once in a while, we'd have a broken bale of straw, and Dad would throw it up against the barn, and he'd say, just leave that one laying, we'll come back and get it later. But then we never did. That bale would get rained on. Once a bale of straw, which is bedding material for livestock normally, once it's been rained on, I tell people that would be like bedding your livestock with pre-wetted straw. Would be like putting a wet diaper on your baby. You'd never do that. So as soon as it got rained on, we'd leave it lay against the barn. Eventually that bale, after a few months, Mother Nature would begin to decompose the inside of that bale. And the biggest, tallest bull thistles on the whole farm were from the couple of seeds that dropped on top of that bale. And these great big tall thistles would grow out of those bales. I would notice that even as a little kid, how this happened. So now we fast forward 15 years and I buy my first house. Turns out the soil I bought was about an inch thick over top of this awful construction fill.
Right.
And I knew as a farm kid, I mean, we grew up with 3 feet of soil on our farm. You're not going to grow very much with 1 inch of topsoil.
That's right.
And I had another problem. I had just graduated from college and I had just bought my first house. I was pretty much the definition of the word broke. So I didn't have money, but I did have a little more knowledge and I knew a lot more about what happened inside those bales that used to lay up against the barn, now having a degree in horticulture. So
right.
I did a bunch of experimenting. It sort of was a you know how they say necessity breeds invention. Mm-hmm. This was that exact case because I didn't have money to build raised beds, which is what a normal gardener would do. So I tried to do some experiments in straw bales, now knowing and understanding that the nutrients given off by oat straw as it decomposes is appealing to thistles, and thistles and peppers and tomatoes take about the exact same nutrient profile.
Okay, okay.
So I thought maybe this would work. So, you know, I did call around and I asked a bunch of professors at University of Minnesota and Texas A&M and Georgia Tech and Penn State, what did they think about this idea? Did they think it would work? And everybody said, well, I don't think that's going to work. You know, I don't think it's going to give you the right nutrients. It's going to dry out too much. But, you know, let us know how it turns out. That's essentially
right.
What they said. So I did a whole bunch of research the first year, and I did a garden down at our farm where I grew up. And then the next year after that, I moved the garden a bit smaller, mind you, but I moved it up to my lot where I had the terrible, awful soil. And I've been doing it ever since this will be my 22nd spring this year. And I really think now I have the method perfected in terms of exactly the process for what works best from year to year.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about that then. I mean, if you're out there and you're listening and you're thinking, what are these people talking about? Straw bale gardens? What in the world? Let's get these people set straight, Joel. What's the first thing you got to know if you're going to get into this, in the straw bale gardening thing?
Well, the first thing that I like to sort of the fog that I like to clear up with people is sometimes people look at a straw bale garden and they think, oh, you're growing vegetables in straw.
Right.
And we're really not. Okay. Here's the thing. What we're doing is we're taking those straw bales, and for the first 2 weeks of this process of straw bale gardening, we're going to treat the bales and what I call condition the bales. Mm-hmm. And what this process really involves is we're going to feed the bacteria that are already inside that bale. And we feed those bacteria what they like to eat, which is a source of nitrogen. You can do this using an organic source of nitrogen or a traditional like lawn fertilizer. And you're going to feed those bacteria what they like to eat and water. And over a very short period of time, those bacteria are going to build up. Believe it or not, JD, every 15 minutes, a bacteria will replicate itself if given the right conditions.
Wow.
So
okay.
Very rapidly inside this bale, we're going to grow bacteria. Now, once bacteria have completely colonized the inside of the bale, now they start to consume the cell structure, which we look at and see as the stalks of straw.
Uh-huh.
It starts to consume those, digest those cells, and break the cells back down into the molecules that created those cells. Those molecules of things like nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, molybdenum, zinc, calcium, iron,
manganese. Hey, plants like those, don't they?
Exactly. And what we see when we look at black soil or soil in general is we see decomposed organic material and we call it dirt.
Uh-huh.
Inside this bale is exactly decomposed organic material. So the misnomer is that we're growing in straw. We're really not. By the time we plant 2 weeks into this process, what we've created inside the bale, what Mother Nature has created inside the bale, is very early stage soil. It's just beginning to become soil, but it's at a point where it started to release nutrients from this decomposition process, this deconstruction of the cells, mm-hmm. and the roots can now absorb those nutrients. So we're really growing in brand new virgin soil inside that bale. We're not really, I mean, it is still going to look like a straw bale. Don't get me wrong. It's still going to look like straw, but it's just starting to become soil. This is the birth of brand new soil inside the bale. Now, there's so many advantages to planting in brand new soil. You don't have last year's disease problems
from
your soil. You don't have last year's insect problems. And the big kicker is you don't have a whole soil filled with weed seeds, which, you know, if you garden in regular garden soil, you know, the biggest problem is you fight weeds all summer long.
All the time.
Exactly. And those weed seeds will sit inert down in your soil up to 25 years before they germinate. So, you know, you saw your neighbor's dandelions go to bloom last year, and that little white frost that landed over. Some of those seeds could have been down in the soil for up to 25 years. Now, you kept all the weeds out of your garden all summer. Not one single weed went to seed. You go through with your rototiller. There was a seed 10 inches deep. Now it's right at the surface, and it gets scratched on the way up there. We call that seed coat scarification, and it gets the right temperature, the right moisture, the right amount of light, and boom, it sprouts to life, germinates. Now you got another weed. So it's impossible to get rid of all the weed seeds that are down in your topsoil. But if you're making brand new soil, all of the bacteria are decomposing the stalks of this straw, and there isn't going to be any weed seeds there. Now, there might be a couple of leftover oat or wheat seeds inside of a bale, depending on the farmer who harvested it. You know, sometimes they have really good equipment. They get all the seeds off. Sometimes they leave a few seeds behind. So you might have to pluck a few of those out early in the spring. But I always tell people, you give yourself 30 seconds per bale per summer. That'll take care of all your weeding.
I mean, can you imagine? Seriously, 30 seconds per bale per summer is your total investment in weeding. That's a pretty significant upgrade, Joel, to my normal raised bed gardening.
Exactly. Yeah. People, you know, that's the number one complaint people have about vegetable gardening is, oh, I hate having to pull all the weeds. And this is really a great solution to that. You eliminate having to pull weeds. And keep this in mind that when the inside of that bale begins the conditioning process, it gets really hot. There's a period of time where it can get 130 to 150 degrees inside that bale. Now, just as a quick side note, what causes this heat is oftentimes very interesting to people. You've got a bacteria, and bacteria are a single-celled organism. They look like a sort of a long tube or a long cylinder. When they get to a certain size, they pinch right in the middle, and that's how they reproduce. Can you hear me, JD?
I can, yes, sir. Okay. I was just in listener mode there for a second.
Oh, no problem. I just didn't hear any background noise. Okay, so they pinch right in the middle. And right in the middle, they start to shake a little bit, and then they split apart. Now you have two bacteria, and each of those halves starts to grow, and when they get to a certain size, they pinch in the middle. So every 15 minutes, if given the right conditions, these bacteria have grown enough that they start to replicate. They pinch in the middle. And when they shake back and forth a little bit, right before they split apart, that creates friction. That just like you rub your hands together, how your hands get warm, it's exactly the same thing. So there's friction created. Now you can imagine, bacteria are so small, you can't see them with the human eye. Matter of fact, you look through a microscope, a powerful microscope, to see a single cell of bacteria. You can fit 100,000 bacteria on the head of a pin. That's how small they are. So you can imagine when these bacteria are replicating and shaking a little bit before they separate, that's not creating very much friction, is it?
No.
But you got to remember, there's not just a few bacteria. There's a few hundred billion bacteria inside that bale. So, and every one of those is dividing every 15 minutes. It's a lot of shaking going on inside that bale, and that vibration is what causes your bales to heat up. This is what causes your compost pile to heat up. Mm-hmm. This is what causes, you know, if you left your grass clippings in your collection bag from your lawnmower last weekend and you forgot to empty the collection bag, go back this weekend and stick your hand in that collection
bag.
Oh,
nice and warm.
See, nice and warm it is. That's all bacteria in there, dividing, replicating, and causing that heat. That's the beginning of that decomposition process when it's doing that.
I think that's my favorite part of this whole process, Joel, is that A, you're starting out with basically clean, virgin, you know, straw. And then at the end of the next year, after the season or the season and a half go, you basically end up with perfect, perfect compost. And so you're almost making an investment in future compost while at the same time getting the benefit of growing food.
Exactly. Yeah. When you're all done with the process, that's what I tell people. You made the most beautiful potting mix you've ever seen. If you could put it in a bag, a fancy bag, and put the word miracle on the front and put some ads on TV, you could sell it for $12 a bag.
Right.
It's beautiful compost, this stuff that you've made. I mean, it's really nice.
Well, I gotta
Don't ever throw it away.
Yeah. No. And I tell you too, the only problem I had with mine last year, well, I had two problems with mine last year. Joel, you know, for the listeners out there, I met Joel about a year ago when I first got his book and I got really into the straw bale gardening. And I only had two problems with my bale. First of all, I planted, mint. Don't ever do that, because I swear my neighbor's lawn is basically mint at this point. You can't get rid of it. It took over an entire bale. And the other problem that I had was that my neighbors, and I'm not trying to disparage my neighbors here, but they're kind of inconsiderate, Joel. They've got these really big trees, and wouldn't you know it, last year they let all the leaves grow in and totally blocked all my sunlight. I mean, talk about inconsiderate. But that's the beauty of the straw bale thing. It's actually right in the middle of the season last year, I was still able to move my garden. I was able to take each bale and kind of drag them, you know, gingerly, as they were still kind of fresh, so they weren't still at that deterioration phase yet. But I was able to move them, and I think that's one of the most important aspects of this whole thing, is that you can place maybe just one bale on your front porch, or you could do them in a controlled area if you were a renter. You're not having to invest in tearing up your soil or tearing up your landlord's soil just to have the benefit of growing a garden. It's really, really mobile, and I think that's one of the biggest benefits to this.
Yeah, we do every year for the Minnesota State Fair here. We do a garden that we bring in for the fair. And what we do is we start the garden at a nursery on pallets. So we put down a pallet with a solid surface on top of the pallet. We put up three bales, start a garden growing, and then when fair time comes, load it on the back of a truck, carry it over to the fairgrounds, unload it. We display it for the 10 days, and people can see the tomatoes and peppers and everything. We get done at the fair, we load it back on the truck, bring it back to the nursery.
Wow.
So you talk about portability. That's what I tell people. You know, if you're a renter, do you want to spend the whole month of May and June prepping and planting your garden if they're not going to renew your lease in July and August? You know,
That's right.
Put it on a pallet, and if you can't get your lease renewed, then have them load your couch, and then right behind that, load your garden. And take it with you.
I love it.
You can literally move your garden right along with you.
Oh, but
a big problem my people run into is they tend to put the bales, their first year, they tend to put them too close together because they don't realize how big the plants are going to get.
That's
you're
right.
going to get a zucchini out the top of there. It's going to get 6 feet wide, you know. Mm-hmm. They're going to get really big. So they put them too close together. Well, then when the stuff starts to grow up and they can't walk up and down in between the aisles anymore and the plants are touching each other, they can grab the bales and scoot them apart a little ways if they need to.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the next year they realize that, and they'll put them, you know, a minimum of 4 feet is what I tell people, but 5 or 6 feet apart is even better, because your plants really do get big. I mean, not that they're going to get, you know, that much bigger than they would in a good soil garden, but plants get much bigger than you anticipate.
Well, and especially once you get into things, you know, one of the main plants that I grew last year that I had a lot of success with was watermelons, but they don't really stay on the bales so much.
No,
they really like to reach out and, you know, visit the neighbors and just kind of go all over the place.
Exactly.
And it does get kind of ridiculous, especially if you're doing that kind of planting. Joel, I want to get more into like a couple of the specifics. Is there a certain type of straw that people should be after when they're going to get the initial purchase done?
Yeah, the kind of straw that decomposes. oat straw, wheat straw, barley straw, rye straw. You can even use hay, believe it or not. You know,
really?
It probably doesn't work quite as well as straw, but sometimes city folk don't even know that there's a difference between straw and hay. Straw is, of course, bedding material, so it's small grains. It's cereal grains that have had the seeds removed.
Okay.
That's where we get Wheaties and oatmeal. Hay is food for livestock, fodder. So it's going to be baled grass or baled alfalfa, something. All the seeds are left in it because that's part of the nutrition that the livestock gets.
Okay.
But keep in mind, I tell people, you buy a bale of hay for this process, it's kind of like you bought a box of chocolates, because you never know what you're going to get when you bite into them. Same thing with a bale of hay. It might have mature seeds in it. If it has mature seeds inside the whole bale and you water and fertilize that bale, guess what's going to happen?
They're going to grow.
They're going to grow. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a chia pet out in the garden.
That's right.
But if you get a bale that's harvested just before those seed heads are mature, what we call early cut hay, or you get a second crop of hay, which is usually hasn't had time to mature seeds on the second crop, then it's going to be nice and clean. So it really depends on what you get. Even if it sprouts and you get a bunch of sprouts that come out, I give people a simple recipe in the book, and it's real easy to do. It's just strong vinegar, a squirt of dish soap, a couple teaspoons of table salt, mix it up in a cake pan, dunk your sponge mop into that vinegar, and then wring it out real good, because you've got a really effective herbicide on the ends of that sponge mop. And just wipe the edges of the bale so it sort of scrapes or scratches the leaves of those sprouts that come out. And that salt will rub the wax coating off. And then the dish soap makes a surfactant so the vinegar sticks to the leaf. And that vinegar is a really good herbicide.
Wow.
And then your garden's going to smell like a salad for a day or two, but that's the worst thing that happens, is the next day, as soon as it's dry, you can plant right into the bale. And that vinegar will do a good job of killing any of those little sprouts that come out, especially if you do that on a warm day.
I wish you had told me that last year, brother. That was an indicator that I missed last year. I want to ask too, is there such a thing as like GMO free or organic straw? I mean, is there a consideration that people should make? Okay. So that is a real thing.
People do grow lots of, I mean, there's, if you look at all the organic bread that you can buy, that's all made from organic wheat, which is all grown in organic wheat fields. Well, here's the thing about straw is most farmers, even if they're an organic farmer, they don't advertise their straw as being organic because it's never consumed. You know, it's used as bedding material. Well, who cares if the animal's going to sleep on it? Who cares if it's organic or not? Nobody. Right. So there's no real extra value in selling organic straw unless you're selling it to someone who's going to grow something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it does add value. So I tell people, you know, just ask around because you'll be really surprised at how many farmers will have organic wheat or organic oats available because they grow grain for organic beef or, you know, people that want organic grain for other purposes or to make flour out of it. So there is a lot of it out there. It's just that nobody markets it as being organic. Now, I'll tell you a great place to go.
All right.
Whatever state you're in, go to their website and go to the ag part of the agriculture section of the state's website. Usually the state has an ag department. And almost every state tries to help their organic growers by helping them market their products. And they'll have a list on there of all the organic growers in the state and what they grow. And so this list, I mean, the Minnesota one is there. You can go and look up and get the phone numbers of the farmers, and it'll tell you, well, this guy grows organic wheat, this guy grows organic straw, and it gives you their phone number because they're trying to market their products. So it's a great resource. Go just call them up. You know, farmers are good people. Talk to them. Tell them what you're looking for. And if they don't have what you're looking for, they're probably going to know somebody who does.
Man.
And they'll refer you to them. So it's a great way to get it. But here's the other thing to consider. Even if you got a bale that wasn't necessarily certified as organic, you got to keep in mind that these cells inside the straw, which may be made from a hybrid or whatever, these cells are going to decompose back into individual nutrient molecules.
Okay.
Okay, so that molecule of phosphorus that helped make up the stalk of that straw plant, oat straw, wheat straw, whatever, it gets decomposed back into a single molecule of phosphorus, what we call a charged cation that can be reabsorbed. And Mother Nature has done this since time began. You know, she used that molecule of phosphorus a couple million years ago to grow a tree. That tree lived for 1,000 years, 500 years. It died, it decomposed. Now that molecule is a free radical again and can be used by a wildflower.
Hmm.
And that gets used for a year or two, then it decomposes and becomes a free radical again. When it gets absorbed by, you know, some other plant and then lives for a while and then decomposes again. So every time Mother Nature goes to work to decompose anything, and keep this in mind, JD, every single living cell on planet Earth throughout the history of time decomposes back into soil. Every plant, every animal, eventually every cell in that substrate becomes soil and then gets reabsorbed again through the root systems of whatever absorbs it and becomes a plant. So it's Mother Nature's basic biology of recycling here that's happening, is this decomposition and regrowth process. So even us, even we become soil at some point in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, our molecules may get reabsorbed to be used to grow something else. So it's one principle of physics that everybody should understand is matter cannot be destroyed. It only changes form, changes shape. And that is a great thing for us because we're going to take these molecules from straw and make soil, and then we're going to make them into a tomato plant.
That's right.
And a pepper plant. And then those peppers are going to decompose and die, and then that's going to, the next year could become a cucumber. You know, the cells from that, or the molecules from that pepper plant. So that's how the process works. So even if you got a bale of straw that happened to be a hybrid that you didn't like the seeds from.
Right.
Those molecules are not the hybrid. You know what I mean? They're,
mm-hmm.
they're molecules. So they get broken back down and they become soil again. And they could be remade into something else the following year. it's not the GMO that is really the concern, because that's just a crossbreed, a hybrid. What it really is a concern is any lingering herbicide that might be in the bale. And the real herbicide we worry about is called, it's in a family called the clopyrallids. And it, actually to use that herbicide on straw that you would then sell is prohibited. I mean, it's off label use. So the farmer who would do that would be doing it illegally. And most farmers are not going to risk, you know, there's a huge liability problem there legally. And then there's their ability to be able to buy chemicals. You know, these farmers need their, whatever they're using for their fields, and they have to have a license to do that. So if they misuse it, they'll take their license away, and then they're really in trouble. You know, right. Their livelihood is at stake. So most farmers are never going to do that. There is a couple of instances throughout the past 25 years or so of recorded instances where this has happened. But, you know, in all my experience with straw bale gardening, this is straw bale gardeners all over the world, JD, that do this. I've never had somebody come to me and say, oh, I had clopyrallids in my straw bales.
Really? Okay.
So it's never happened.
All right. So the main concern then, if you're wanting to grow, you know, GMO-free food and organic food, is to pick the correct plants after you get your straw bales set up,
exactly.
Basically.
And, you know, if you want to have certified crop that you're going to sell as certified organic, then I believe you are required to prove that your bales are certified organic bales. If you wanted to do that, because just like your soil, you know, if you want to sell organic produce, you can't just go buy a plot of land and plant it and sell the produce right away. You have to maintain that soil in an organic state for, I believe it's 2 or 3 years, according to federal regulations. And then you can start selling your crops as organic, because you have to get rid of any potential residue from chemical fertilizers and herbicides that might have been used on that soil. So it'd be the same basic requirement in a straw bale, that you would have to start with something that's organic in order to be able to certify that your produce is organic.
Well, and by the time that 3 years is up, that original straw bale is long gone anyway, right?
Exactly. I mean,
so kind of a hit or miss or a moot point there anyway. Well, we're getting ready to go to a break, Joel. I really appreciate you being here today. I want to come back and kind of work our way through some of the actual, you know, the physical, what we're actually going to do, how we lay these straw bales out, all of that kind of stuff, which plants are going to work. I've got some guys in the chat room who are curious about cannabis, and I'm going to ask that question just to throw it out there. Is that something that is going to work in these straw bales if you're in a place where you're allowed to do that, Joel?
You betcha.
Okay, then we'll just leave it right there. It is a possibility to the listeners out there. It is something that we could definitely explore. But again, really appreciate you being here. Want to really recommend you guys check out the website, strawbalegardens.com. I cannot recommend this book highly enough, Joel. I absolutely love the pictures, and I think my favorite part is the diagrams, the actual, you know, handwritten or hand-drawn diagrams that you've got in the middle of the book, because they really, really show just about everything that's possible with a straw bale garden. And we also had another question about cold frame usage and how you can kind of set these up for multi-season use. So I know that you're getting ready you're geared up to basically answer all of those questions. So I just want to encourage people who are listening that that's where we're going to go with this conversation when we get back from this 3-minute break, and really appreciate all of you guys tuning in today. And I know Joel will appreciate it if you go and get one of his books. Now, Joel, my book that I got from you is autographed, and I hate to brag, but is there a way that people might be able to get an autographed copy if they reach out to you through the website?
They get it on our website.
Boom.
An autographed copy. Believe me, I sign every one.
Awesome. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, keep it right here, guys. We've got more questions for Joel, the one and only straw bale gardener, creme de la creme of straw bale gardening. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back in 3 minutes. Keep it right here. We'll see you soon.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to AllGov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
after work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago, when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life.
Really?
I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals.
Wow. Why are you so nice to me?
Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now. Only at HempUSA.org.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hangar 18, your TFR Roundtable, Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for hanging out with us today, and especially all of you guys who are hanging out with us in the chat room and on the live feeds today. It's just so nice to have you guys along for the ride. We are entering the last segment of the show today with our very special guest, Joel Karsten, who has taken some time out of his schedule to come and educate all of us about what I believe to be the most remarkable form of gardening that you could possibly ever run across. I'm talking about if you're like me and super lazy, ladies and gentlemen, and don't want to weed, this is the name of your garden game right here, Straw Bale Gardens. I want to encourage everybody to go to strawbalegardens.com. I would personally purchase the book from there because Joel has made it apparent that he will be happy to autograph a copy for you. And I'll tell you, this is something that you're going to come back to year after year, ladies and gentlemen, because the information in this is timeless and the pictures are outstanding. Now, Joel, before we went to the break, we were kind of talking about the initial steps. We've talked a little bit about making the correct selection of your straw bales. We've also talked a little bit about the conditioning process, the two-week portion of time where you're essentially just adding a nitrogen-based fertilizer to the bales and watering it every day and letting that decomposition start to occur inside. But we really haven't gotten into the actual layout of how the straw bale gardens would look on the ground and some of the other ancillary, you know, attachments to them. We talked about the cold frame and things like that. So any place in there that you'd like to pick it up, you know, we're basically at the point where we've got them ready to plant, but we don't know what to do with them. So if you could take it away from there, sir, we would all be very appreciative.
Sure. Well, I can tell you that people do all kinds of crazy stuff. You give them the right idea and send them off in a direction and they'll come up with all kinds of stuff. So there's lots of ways you can do this. But I'll tell you what I do and what seems to be most efficient is if you run 5 bales end to end, but you want to turn them so that the strings are on the sides of the bales. Strings don't want to touch the ground because if the strings touch the ground, especially if they're hemp or sisal, they're going to decompose quickly. That bale is going to break apart. The strings will come loose. And then you lose compression on the bale.
Okay.
What's really important is we maintain that squeezing, that compression, because that helps with the rapid decomposition.
Okay.
So that's the first thing, how you orient them. I like to just do 5 bales in a row. It's a good length because I put a fence post at the end of each row of bales.
So like a 6-foot drive in the ground type of fence post here?
Exactly. They're, on the farm, we call them T-posts.
Okay, yeah,
you look at them from the top, they look like a capital letter T.
Mm-hmm.
$5-6 for fence posts. And, you know, once you get the tallest ones you can find, I just bought some today because I'm setting up a garden, a sample garden tomorrow. I got 8-footers. But if you can get 9-footers, get 9-foot tall ones.
Okay.
Because when you pound that in the ground, I want still to have a 7-7.5-foot trellis that's going to be above these bales.
Ah.
Now, between those two fence posts at the top, I like to put a board, just a 2x2 or 2x4 or a 2x6, whatever you have laying around.
Mm-hmm.
And that will keep the posts separated apart because when you put wires between the posts and you tighten the wires up nice and tight, it tends to squeeze the posts together.
Okay.
So that 2x4 will keep them apart.
And you're just now using, just to clarify, you're just using like baling wire or something to attach that board to the tops?
Okay. The board attached to the top, it's real easy to do if you cut a little, so we show you in the book the details. We cut a little slit in the bottom edge of the 2x4,
mm-hmm.
and then that slit will slide right over the tongue of the T-post.
You're so smart, Joel. Okay.
And then when you tighten the wires together, it just holds it right in place.
Ah, beautiful. Okay.
So you really don't need to fasten it up there at all. It just hangs up there by itself. Okay, so now we're going to run wires every 8 to 10 inches. And what it used for wire is 14 or 16 gauge, just electric fence wire will work really well. You can buy it at any farm supply store. The problem with buying at a farm supply, they make you buy a quarter of a mile at a time. So it's about $14, but you know, you're going to have enough wire for you and all your friends and neighbors for the
rest
of your life.
That's right, forever.
So 14 gauge works great. 16 gauge is okay. Don't buy anything lighter, however, than 16 gauge because it gets too thin. It'll vibrate in the wind and it'll cut the tissues of your plants. So don't get too thin.
Okay.
So 14 gauge works best. You get to 12 gauge, that's heavier. That gets expensive and it's hard to bend with your hands. For a lot of people, it's hard to cut. So 14 gauge is what you want to go with. So I stretch wires every 8 to 10 inches all the way up and down this post. Now, all your tomatoes and your peppers and your cucumbers and your squash you can put up there, your acorn squash. Can't do butternuts up there, but acorns. Your peas and beans, of course, will climb up that trellis.
Mm-hmm.
Even my potatoes, when they come out of the bale, I'll train the potato vines up on that trellis. And that gets all the vegetation vertical, gets it up in the air. Now, you get better air circulation around that foliage, and it keeps the leaves, surfaces, bottom surface, top surface, keeps them nice and dry.
Okay.
We want dry vegetable leaves, but we want consistently moist roots.
Well, we should pause there just because I know you're a horticulture expert, and that idea of people watering their gardens, just going out and spraying the leaves down, that's not really a good deal, is it, Joel?
It's really not. No,
right.
It's a great way to spread fungal disease and provide a great environment for insect reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
What insects are looking for, JD, is a nice, moist, humid environment where they can lay their little spider mite egg sacs underneath the leaf, and
right.
It stays nice and moist, and then their little eggs will hatch. What they don't like is a dry leaf that has a dry surface. The wind's always blowing on it, get good air circulation. They don't like that environment, so they're not going to lay egg sacs there. They're going to go to your neighbor's garden and lay them over there. So we can prevent – now, you're not going to get rid of all your insects. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to mislead people. You're still going to have some insects, but you – change the culture of your garden enough that you deter the reproduction of insects in your garden.
Mm-hmm.
And that will slow down much of the damage that's done by insects. The other thing it does is it stops the spread of fungal disease. What fungal disease need are wet spores. And wet spores come from you turning on your sprinkler in the morning,
exactly,
getting all the leaves wet in order to get the roots wet. So we're just going to switch and use a soaker hose or a dripper style system, irrigation system. Run that down the length of the bale, and if it's a soaker, it's just going to leak out all the way down the hose.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a dripper-style system, now you can put an emitter right next to each plant. So you can put a 3-gallon-per-hour emitter next to your tomato, and next to your pepper, you could put a 0.5-gallon-per-hour emitter. Now when you water that garden for 5 minutes, the tomato is going to get 6 times as much water as that pepper plant or whatever. So you get the right amount of moisture on each plant.
Oh, so really then ideally the soaker hose would be a second choice to something where you're targeting each individual plant. Okay.
Exactly. But soaker hoses are cheaper. So
that's right. They are.
People will start out with a soaker hose. You know, 20 bucks for a 50 foot of soaker hose is a pretty inexpensive investment.
Mm-hmm.
But the dripper is a little more expensive. 50 bucks probably for a 50 foot system. But now you've got something that's going to last you probably 10, 12 years. Where the soaker hose is going to give you about 2 seasons and then
right.
It springs a leak and then you got a big mess.
I got to ask too, is it possible to overwater these bales?
Really,
I
mean, not.
Given the open nature of the bottom, it seems like you could just do the soaker hose and just water the heck out of everything.
Yeah, you know, if you don't have an issue with how much water you use, it's not a problem. But we should all try to conserve water as much as we can.
Agreed.
And I'll tell you, if you water too much, JD, what happens is water comes out the bottom of the bale, but it carries with it
all
any
of the
soluble
nutrients.
So
makes sense.
Especially nitrogen, which is the number one nutrient that plants need. It'll tend to leach nitrogen. Now you got to fertilize more because you're putting nitrogen in the top just to leach it out the bottom. So I tell people, go out there with your stopwatch, turn your water on, see how long it takes to saturate that bale before one drip comes out the bottom, and then stop your watch. Now back up about a minute. So you water a minute less than what it takes to completely soak and saturate the bale. And now you invest in a little hose end digital timer, one that you put a battery in. It's a $20 to $40 investment. But it saves you an entire summer's worth of watering labor.
Roger
you
that.
Hook it up to your soaker hose. You hook it up to your dripper system, and you tell it, "Hey, I want you to turn on at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I want you to water for 6 minutes and 10 seconds, or whatever length of time you need." Who wants to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and water their garden? Not me.
Nobody.
But this system will kick on whatever time you tell it to come on, before anybody's in the shower or whatever. It turns on. Waters your garden for a few minutes just to resaturate those bales, any moisture that was used yesterday. Once that bale is completely saturated, keep this in mind. A dry bale of straw will hold between 3 and 5 gallons of water inside that bale. So there's a good reservoir of water inside that bale.
Okay.
Now you try to put one more drop of water in that bale and it won't hold it. It'll just run out the bottom because you can't overwater a straw bale. So it's a nice consistent moisture level without ever being too much water, which is really hard to get in most planting media. Is very hard to get, which straw is just the nature of the straw itself being these long, narrow, hollow, skinny tubes. That's what straw is made up of.
Mm-hmm.
It's the water molecules are held inside of those tubes because of adhesion and cohesion, two basic principles of physics. That's what makes those straw so good at this job it has in agriculture of capturing and holding moisture from livestock. So, you know, you throw it in with your pigs or cows, it absorbs moisture for a couple of weeks and it gets fully saturated. Then the farmer sends his son in there with a pitchfork to put it all in the manure spreader and haul it to the field. So it's a transport device. It's really a diaper for our livestock because of its ability to absorb and hold moisture. And it does the exact same thing in our garden. It holds that moisture in the presence of the roots. So it does a great job at that.
I love it. And you know, what I'm most astounded about is that in the 45 minute conversation that we've had, we've now eliminated the need to go out and water your garden every day. And we've also eliminated the need to weed your garden every day. And it's kind of getting kind of lazy here, Joel.
I tell people, you know, you set the system up. It takes you a few days to condition the bales and then you're going to go out and plant. That takes you an afternoon. And then after you plant, you just come back in about 30 days and start harvesting. And I tell people, you know, don't forget you have a garden because you don't have to go out there and weed and water every day. Sometimes you might forget you have a garden. So put a post-it note in your kitchen to remind you, hey, you've got stuff out there. You might want to go out and take a look and harvest something.
Man, can you imagine? I mean, how great that would be, ladies and gentlemen, to just actually have to go, oh, I got a post-it note on the fridge. I haven't looked at my garden in a week, and to go out there and find no weeds and all the plants are happy and growing well. I mean, that's really what everybody needs these days, Joel. I wanted to ask a little bit more about the planting itself. Are we talking about planting from seed? Are there special conditions that we would have to use if we were going to plant from seed? Do you even recommend that? Or do you recommend, you know, going to the nursery and trying to find some small starters?
Here's the thing. If you already plant seeds in a garden from seed, if you plant from seed in your garden, then use seeds. But if you usually use bedding plants, depending on where you live in the country, of course, if you're up north where we are here, you can't plant tomatoes from seed because you'll never get a crop.
That's right.
You need a good 8 week head start on that tomato plant in order to get anything. So you're going to use bedding plants for those. So whatever you normally use, that's what you're going to use here. Now, if you're going to plant seeds, you need to make a seed bed on top of the bales. And what I don't want you to do is take your shovel and go over to your garden and take a scoop of soil and put it on top of the bale. People say they've done that. I say, well, now you're not straw bale gardening anymore. Now you're simply soil gardening on top of bales.
That's right.
So the only advantage you have is it's raised up off the ground a little ways. Because now weed seeds are going to come with that soil.
You just brought all your weed seeds over with you. Yeah.
And you brought your disease problems and you brought your insect problems and you've introduced them to this garden. So don't use soil. Go to the garden center, get a bag of soilless mix. It'll be called planting mix or potting mix or whatever. Put an inch of that on top of the bale, pack it down. Now take your seeds and put in a checkerboard pattern on top of that bale. Use the seed spacing that they tell you on the seed pack. That's but don't plant rows. Plant like a checkerboard.
Okay.
Your peas and your beans and your carrots, that's, you know, all the stuff that are cool season crops. That's what we normally up here up north, that's what we plant from seed because we have a long enough season for those to become mature.
What about crop selection itself? Are there things that will work and won't work? And what about companion crops, Joel?
Okay, I tell people, you know, if you're a avid vegetable gardener and you like sweet corn, stick with the soil for your sweet corn. Don't put sweet corn in the bales. You're going to get maybe three stalks of corn out of a bale because the roots are huge. If you like asparagus and rhubarb, stick with your soil, because if you plant those in a straw bale, it takes 3 years just to get a good root established on rhubarb and asparagus. They come back every year. They're perennial. But in 3 years, your bale has disintegrated. It's nothing but a level, you know, little lump of soil, and that's all that'll be left.
Right.
So you'll never harvest out of that bale. You know, do the things that you normally plant. And if in a traditional garden, we do lots of companion planting as well. If you've ever been involved in square foot gardening, which is another great method of gardening, all of those tactics and techniques in terms of how to plant, interplant early season with late season, things that get real big and tall versus things that stay small. I tell people, you know, if you're going to put a tomato in a bale, that tomato is going to take all the space above that bale up on that trellis wire.
Right.
So don't put, if you put two tomatoes, you're just going to get two plants that give you half as much production. Instead, do one tomato, and then in the sides of the bale, you can do basil. You can do some lettuce on the surface of the bale, because that stuff's going to be up and usually harvested before that tomato really gets mature up on top of the bale.
Okay.
So just be smart. You know, if it's early season stuff that's going to grow quickly and it's got a 40-day maturity, 45-day maturity, that could certainly go with a potato, which isn't going to be mature for, you know, at least 100 days, 120 days, and isn't going to have much of a vine for the first month and a half. So by the time the potato vine gets up on that trellis and starts to shade anything, well, you've already harvested your radish and your, you know, other crops like that. So,
okay.
You know, it just takes a little bit of common sense. If you're absolutely brand new to vegetable gardening, I would highly recommend a good book on plain vegetable gardening. I mean, we're going to talk a lot about it in my book, but my book is really focused on straw bale gardening and then incorporating what you already know about vegetable gardening in a straw bale garden. We don't really go back to the beginning and break things down to the super basics in terms of what you plant with what. We give you some ideas, but you know, there's better books out there for brand new gardeners who have absolutely no experience at all with how to choose seeds and what to plant with what. You know, there's a Vegetable Gardener's Bible is one I can think of off the top of my head. That's a really good one.
Okay.
Mel Bartholomew's book on square foot gardening goes into some of that stuff as well. But we just don't, you know, you can only cover so much in 150 pages. So
that's true. Well, now, to be honest, though, your book is so good. The pictures in this thing make it worth being able to go out and look at some other information if you have to. Because if you want straw bale information, I mean, this is not a book that you could ever possibly live without as far as I'm concerned, man.
Well, I agree with you, JD. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely outstanding. I can't say high enough, you know, I can't give you enough praise about it. I wanted to ask, though, about somebody had asked about cold frames and whether or not they were compatible with straw baling and how to kind of lengthen the season, the growing season with this method.
Sure. I'll get people that will put straw bales in high tunnels all the time. We have a lady out east that does 3,000 bales in a high tunnel. She grows all kinds of leafy greens for vegetable or leafy greens for restaurant production. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in early plant, getting them started early in a high tunnel, you know, the bales are going to get warm during that conditioning period, and that will help a little bit at least to heat that high tunnel. If you've got a real small area like a cold frame, the bales inside of that cold frame, it's going to help heat that cold frame up because it's a lot smaller area. And you know, bale's not going to be like a propane heater. It's not going to give you that kind of heat, but it gives a little bit of heat to help take the chill off, and your stuff that grows when it's real cool will do really well in there. So yeah, definitely it certainly makes it viable. Now I've seen lots of pictures online, don't confuse this, about people using straw bales to make a cold frame. That's a sort of a different subject.
Yeah, that's like that structural
that
building.
Work. Yeah, that does work really well, but that's not really what we'd be doing here. What we'd be doing is building a cold frame and then putting the bales inside of it. The thing you need to keep in mind is that a bale is pretty tall. You know, you get it up on edge and it's 20 inches tall or so. So now your cold frames are probably going to have to be a little taller than the typical one.
Right.
So you need to almost build them special just to fit the straw bales. And I don't know if that's feasible for somebody or not, but if they wanted to do it, it certainly would work. Well, it's not a problem at all.
One of the techniques in your book too is that you've got that trellis system already set up. So you just use Mylar essentially and make a cold frame that way. Wouldn't that be way more effective?
Yeah, we put a, it's called in the book, it's, this chapter is called the Straw Bale Greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a clear polyfilm, like a 3 or 4 mil plastic film. And you got to use the clear stuff so sun can get through. And if you plant real early and you're still subject to a frost, a late spring frost, you've got these posts at the end of the row of bales. You stretch a wire between the posts 10 inches above the bale. Now you drape the plastic over the top. You got a little greenhouse
right
on the top of your bale. And the plastic is a terrible insulator, so it doesn't keep the cold air out. What it does is it keeps the hot air in because the bales are generating this heat. So it just keeps a little bubble of heat right above that surface of that bale, and that'll protect your plants from the cool temperatures overnight.
Very cool. Especially right now. I mean, we've got 23 states with freaking snow in them right now, Joel, and it's almost May. I don't know what is going on in the world, but, it seems to me like, especially if you're going from a seed standpoint, you got that bed to be another great way to increase your chances of being able to germinate those seeds, because seeds like warmth and humid conditions too. So, the Mylar addition to me seems to make the most sense. I had a question from the chat room, if you wouldn't mind there, Joel. Somebody asking about how to replace the bales as they become decomposed. Is that a situation where you're just going to continue to kind of put new bales on top of the old ones, or do you recommend doing the whole garden in some sort of format that you can remove all of that, you know, at the end of the season, take that to your compost pile, and then just start anew in the same place?
I'm so glad you asked this question.
Well, thanks.
Here's the thing. If you get a really heavy bale to start out with, you know, one that's really hard to carry home from the garden center or the farmer's house or wherever you bought it, and it's a real dense bale, you can garden in that bale usually for 2 years.
Okay.
If you get a light bale that's real squishy and it's easy to carry home, that bale's going to give you one season and that's it. It's going to collapse right on the spot. If you're using a second year bale, the bale doesn't get hot again the second year. It only gets hot once. You only condition it once. So the second season, I suggest people plant things in it like root crops, potatoes and carrots and beets, things that don't need the extra heat from the first year of decomposition.
Okay.
Put your tomatoes and peppers and your warm season crops in that first year bale because it's going to get really warm, and that helps encourage that root production early in the season. When your bales are all done, or your first year or your second year bale is all done, and it's sort of collapsed and it's made this little pile of compost, I'm introducing something. I just started talking about this spring. It's research I've been doing for the last 3 years, and I think your listeners will find this really interesting. It's a process where we make our own bales.
What?
Isn't that interesting? Out of last year's half-decomposed bale that's half-fallen over, and then we also introduce into these new bales that we're going to make other organic material. We introduce some grass clippings and some leaves, and we introduce some, you know, whatever organic material you have around that will decompose. You can put vegetable peelings from in the house in here. Anything that would normally go in a compost bin can go into these bales. Now, if you make bales, JD, you have to have a baler, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yes,
right.
Yes, you do. I'm going to show you, we show you on our blog, on our website, you can make the $8 or the $12 baler or the $18 baler. One of them is made out of 3 2x6s, and one of them is made out of 5 2x6s.
What?
So it's very, very simple. I know, it's amazing, isn't it? Well, all we need to do is create a couple of real long arms, so we got a lever, and then we're going to put a big Rubbermaid bucket underneath this plunger system that we made, and we're going to fill that bucket full of last year's straw. First, we put a couple strings in the bottom with some duct tape to hold the strings in place.
Then
we fill it up with last year's straw from the straw bale, put some grass clippings, some leaves, vegetable peelings. You know, you trim your lilac bush, throw the leaves in there. Your tulips, when they're expired, you throw the tulip branches in there. Anything you have, throw it in this bucket. A mixture of stuff works best. Don't make it all out of grass clippings or all out of leaves or whatever. Mix stuff together. You get that bucket full. Now you get on the end of this giant lever that you've made, this baler, and you squeeze it down. If you're a big guy like me, I'm about 235 pounds. I can create 1,250 pounds of pressure on that bale.
Right.
Now, the important thing is when we squeeze this bucket, when you squeeze this organic material into this big Rubbermaid tub, we want to get it really compressed, super tight. You can't just get up on top of it and jump up and down. You won't get it squeezed tight enough.
Okay.
It needs to be squeezed tight enough that the organic material will begin rapid decomposition. Otherwise, it won't work. Okay, so we squeeze the stuff together, compress, 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 till the bucket's full and level with the top and compress down. Now we tie the strings up. Now we take this bucket, we drag it over where we want to have our garden, we dump the bucket out. The material that comes out of that bucket will be very precarious because there's short strands of material. It's not like long fibers of oats and wheat stalks that are held together by the strings. This bale would fall apart very quickly. Even though it's dense, very compressed, it still would fall apart. So what we do is we wrap the whole bale with chicken wire.
Okay.
30 cents worth of chicken wire. Once you wrap the whole bale, I want you to overlap the ends a little bit of the chicken wire, cut it off, Now put a 2x2 right behind those two layers of chicken wire and use your staple gun and staple the chicken wire onto the 2x2. Now grab the 2x2 and twist it. You can do this with a pipe wrench or a big pliers, whatever you have. What also works great, at the bottom of that 2x2, leave it stick out the bottom of your bale or of your wire about 5 or 6 inches. Now when you twist it and you get it really super tight and you can't get it any tighter, that'll squeeze that bale together nice and tight and hold it together. Now pound that 2x2 right into the ground. And that, it'll poke right down in the soil. Wow. And that bale will sit there. You can garden in it this next spring. You could go out this afternoon and make some bales if you wanted to.
Right.
And then you gotta condition them just like you do a straw bale for that 10-12 day period of time. And they'll heat up just like the straw bale does. They give you all the same basic characteristics, but they give you even better production than a straw bale does, believe it or not.
Well, I believe it because you're hedging your bets by putting all that organic material into the center of the bale to begin with. Right. I mean, that's like a supercharged. Yeah.
Right. It's a mixture of these different materials, which gives you different micronutrients. You know, when straw breaks down, it only gives you what straw was made out of. But if you have vegetable peelings and you have grass clippings and you have leaves and all this other stuff, you get all kinds of different nutrient mixes together and your plants do really well. You can use those little, I call them bale bins is what I call them, because they're like a miniature compost bin in the shape of a bale.
Huh.
You can use those for 2 seasons as well.
Wow.
And then when you're done, you pull the 2x2 out of the ground and you untwist the wire, and then you just make another bale, put the wire back around, twist it back up, and you reuse the same exact thing. So you're making your bales for free, JD.
That's right. That? It's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, it really is like the most self-sufficient way to garden I've ever heard of. And I mean, the investment up front, the most expensive thing you're going to pay for if you want to is the water timer. Outside, I mean, think of what the costs are in building a quality raised bed. You got to go out and get good soil. You got to do all that stuff. It's so expensive. Yeah. This is like you go out, you buy a $4 bale of straw from your local farmer, do a little conditioning, do a little bit of setup, and you're golden, man. I mean, just absolutely golden. Joel, a couple other quick questions from the chat room. Yep. Somebody wanted to know about a particular tomato called a vodka tomato, which I'd never heard of before, and wondering if you're familiar with that. And also someone curious if you could use straw bale gardens to grow mushrooms.
Okay, answer to the first question. I've never heard of a vodka tomato, but if you find a scotch tomato, I'd love to try that.
Roger that, okay.
but I've never heard of a vodka tomato, so
me neither.
I can't help them with that.
Okay.
I'd love to bluff my way through it, but I just don't have an answer.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so, you know, they may grow really well. You know, I tell people if it has roots, it's going to grow in a straw bale garden.
I would think
Pretty much anything, if it likes a neutral pH and it likes, you know, well-drained, but plenty of moisture, it's gonna do really well in there. What was your second question? I don't remember.
Mushrooms. People are wondering would be something. Okay, go ahead.
Well, the bales will grow mushrooms on their own, but they won't be mushrooms you want to eat. They're usually going to be things like what we call ink toppers, scrambled egg mushrooms. Just they're awful looking, and apparently they don't taste good either. I don't eat any mushrooms that come out of my bales because I don't know one mushroom from another.
Copy that.
But I have had people tell me that they've seeded their bales on purpose. These are, you know, people who are mushroom fans, mm-hmm. and they know their mushrooms, and they seed them, and yes, bales will produce mushrooms. If you put spores in them and you know what you're doing, you certainly could use it as a substrate to grow mushrooms.
Wow.
You'll see your bales will naturally sprout mushrooms.
That's one of the indicators that your conditioning is going well, isn't it?
Yeah, people will email me in the spring and they're like, oh, I just came in from my straw bale garden. The whole thing is ruined. It's covered in mushrooms. And I write them back right away and I say, congratulations. Mushrooms are a really good sign. This is a good thing.
That's right. Joel, we are out of time. You've squandered another hour hanging out with us. I really appreciate you showing up today.
The world is
great. Me too, man.
Thank you so much, Katie. We'll do it again.
Absolutely. Let's do it again. And ladies and gentlemen, seriously, please go and get this book, Straw Bale Gardens. If you have an interest in this or you have a family member who's interested in this, this is a book that you cannot afford to miss. We'll see you guys later on tonight for the Woo Crew. Stay tuned right now for Roger Sales' outstanding show coming up next.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call in to your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.